Welcome back to another episode of A Better Way of Earning. We often talk about money as a numbers issue, but earning is deeply psychological. Studies in behavioral economics show that during times of uncertainty, people default to risk-averse behavior, even when calculated risk would improve their long-term position. Why? Because fear narrows perception. When layoffs increase, inflation rises. When headlines turn volatile, the brain shifts into protection mode. And protection mode doesn't think long term. It thinks survive. Today, we're going to talk about the difference between scarcity thinking and ownership thinking, and how one quietly limits your earning potential. So let's start with the data. According to the Federal Reserve Survey of Household Economics, nearly 40% of Americans would struggle to cover an unexpected $400 expense without borrowing or selling something. That statistic doesn't reflect income. It reflects fragility. Now, combine that with the Gallup research that shows only one-third of employees feel engaged at work. Low engagement, low savings, high economic uncertainty, this creates a psychological pattern. I should be grateful just to have a job. Gratitude is healthy. Dependency is dangerous. Scarcity thinking sounds like, I can't leave. This is the best I'll get. Now is not the time. I'll wait until things calm down. How many of us have said those things? How many of us have found ourselves trapped into careers or jobs that really didn't work for us because of fear of stepping out into something different, that everything will fall apart? I know I've been there. I know I've talked to a lot of people who've sat, not just currently, but who spent decades in careers and industries that they didn't even like because they felt like that was the best way to support their family and to pay their bills. I approach a lot of my business processes through neuroscience. It's something that helped me to get out of my vicious cycles, especially when it came down to money and decisions and caring for my family. And so I apply that a lot in a lot of my teachings, because once you understand how your brain processes information, it helps you to better understand your whys. Why do I behave this way? Why do I find myself in the same cycle? Why is this always happening to me? Well, we have to dive a little deeper. A lot of times people do surface work and they want to make you feel like that your choices and your decisions are completely up to you. Some of them are, but some of your reactive behavior, especially during stressful times, is programmed. Programmed through fear memories, programmed through community, observation, your ecosystem, your exposure. The only way to change those behaviors is to understand what they are, what triggers them, and how do you build healthier solutions around those circumstances when they arise. I'll be the first one to tell you that it was a part of my life. This is how I navigated majority of my adulthood, especially during the times that I was a single mom and my kids relied on me. I thought in the mindset of pure scarcity. I did not think that I could be able to survive or even come out of that hole. But it wasn't the shift or change of job or income that brought me out of that space. It was the shift of my thinking process and the ability to heal some of those triggers that I found myself circling back into time and time again, and being able to build those barriers so that I don't fall into the same traps. Ownership thinking has a different flow to it. Ownership thinking sounds like, what skills can I build while I'm here? We talked about that in our last episode. How can I reduce my dependency? That could be dependency on just your one income, dependency on borrowing, dependency on relying on someone else to help get you out this hole. What leverage do I actually have? Now, this is big. This is huge. When you actually sit down and take some actual inventory of what is happening within your world that you can control, and we're gonna discuss that later on in the podcast. When you begin to actually understand the leverage that you actually have, the empowerment that comes with that, the planning that's built off of that, and the movement forward that arrives from that realization is something powerful, you guys. Another level of ownership thinking says, what is within my control? Oftentimes, we spend a lot of time, a lot of energy stressing about things that we have no control over. When that energy can be placed into, what control do I have? What leverage do I have? What skills, what actions can I take to change my outcome? Ownership doesn't deny reality. Let me be clear about that. Doesn't put you in this Disney space or this euphoric space that you don't pay attention to the stacks of bills that's piling up beside you, or the lights and the water gets shut off and you're still in the mindset that everything is okay. That's not what ownership does. It helps you to navigate life strategically. Research of control psychology shows that individuals who believe they influence outcomes tend to earn more over time than those who attribute outcomes primarily to external forces. That doesn't mean that systems don't exist. It means response matters. Scarcity contracts, ownership expands. We've talked about some of the information, but let's apply this to real world application. Let's make it practical. Tool number one, let's discuss the control audit. Get a piece of paper. Draw two columns. If you're over 40, it was called a T-chart back in the day. But draw you two columns. Column A, and label column A as what I cannot control. There's a psychological reason why we put this first. Column B, we're going to label what can I influence. Some ideas or some things that you can list in column A that you cannot control. Global policy, market cycles, company restructuring. Column B, what can you control when it comes down to your earning potential? Skill development, network expansion, expense management, negotiation strategies, secondary income preparation. And this is just to name a few. We're talking around this topic of a better way of earning. So I want you to really focus in on earning potential, okay? We're not going to talk about and expand into life and relationships and marriage and kids and all of that, because if that's the case, your list would be about 800 pages long. So let's focus strictly on earning potential. What is it that you cannot control when it comes down to your earning? And so we've listed a few. But what can you influence? And I know I talk a lot about skills development, but here's what I want you to understand when I talk about skills development, because there's a lot of keywords out there and a lot of people making a lot of money off of helping you get your skills. There are skills development opportunities that will cost you absolutely nothing. absolutely nothing. You don't have to pay thousands and thousands of dollars to go and get this certification or go and get this degree or whatever. You can do that. But if you're looking at improving your earning potential without adding more debt to your bank account, then begin somewhere. There are community centers. There are local organizations that offer skills development and training that you're part of their community. If you are a veteran, you can get this training through the VA where they offer these credits to go and get this training. If you are in a larger corporation, this is where that negotiation skill comes in. Negotiate with them to pay for your skills development. This is a part of their retention. This is a part of their HR program. It's just a lot of people don't usually ask about it. What I want you to do is I want you to create this control audit for you. This is not someone else's control audit. This is specific for you. And as you create this, don't do this exercise and then push it over to the side or add it to the pile of everything else to do. Use this daily, weekly, quarterly, check back on it. See how much you have accomplished on your control side. And then add to, if there are other things that arise that you are not in control over, then build things that you can control equally on side B. And before you know it, you'll have new skills, new opportunities, new windows and doors to open up for you that you might have never thought about during your stressful time. Okay? Okay. Tool number two, the dependency ratio. Now, this may be difficult for a lot of people because this puts you in the reality of really kind of sitting in where you're at and what you're leaving yourself open to. In this exercise, calculate what percentage of your income depends solely on one employer. Now listen, if the answer is 100%, I don't want you to look at that as a failure. It is not a failure. We've talked about multiple revenue streams in the last episode, but I never want you to look at if your sole job pays your sole bills, that doesn't mean that you failed at something. It's just information. Once you decide on that ratio, now ask yourself, what would reduce that percentage, maybe from 100 to 80%? In 12 months. Now, this is where your exercise one, the control audit, could come into play. If you're building up new skills and new opportunity and new knowledge, and for some of us, it's not even building, it's remembering. In today's world, we move so fast, you guys. We have so much on our plates. We are distracted 24 hours a day. Some of us don't even sleep well because our minds are constantly thinking and stressing and moving and trying to plan. And so this control audit, hopefully, if you're really taking time to do this properly, will open up some information and some thoughts and some expertise that you might have forgot about. One thing about training and knowledge, it won't go away. No one can take that from you. So there may be something that you did 10 years ago that you don't have to start from ground zero. You just need to update it. I'll tell you a reality. So when I was building this platform, Ascent Global, I'm one of those people that I walk my talk, right? And so when the development team had the beta portion of it ready, the first person to try it was me. And this was a system that I created. I created it out of my decades of HR experience and the frustrations that I watched happen industry over industry and decade over decade of people, great people with amazing talent and capabilities being overlooked because of algorithms. So I wanted to create a platform that got us back to being proud of being the people that we are, right? If you join Ascent, the first thing that you'll notice when you're building your professional profile is there are no uploads of resumes and bullet points. This is information from your own perspective. One of the things I was most proud of is we start with skills first. So you list your hard skills, then you list your soft skills, because in today's time, employers are understanding that it's not just that training, which is your hard skills, that's critical and what makes someone vital and valuable to their company. It is the mixture of the hard skills and the soft skills that you already have innate or that you've learned over time that makes you unique and an asset for them. And so we start with the skills. Well, I added in another layer because, again, one thing that frustrated me about my resume was I just looked like everybody else, right? So there was no way for you to understand that just because I had this title, that there was so much more that I did within that space that most people didn't do. So I created prompts. And you and the hard skills has the same prompt, but the soft skills, you have the opportunity that you choose your prompt and you explain that skill set of yours in your own words. And so I tell you this, not as a selling feature, I promise. I tell you this because I created the template. I gave the development team the information, but it wasn't until I sat down to build my own profile that it reminded me of some hard skills that I forgot. And it wasn't that I didn't know it. It wasn't that I don't even apply it on day to day. It's the fact that we've been programmed to look at what is, and I'm using air quotes, important to put on that one page resume, that it taught me to forget a lot of things. And so the biggest discovery or rediscovery was coding. I've been coding for decades, but I didn't call it coding. I just understand the back end of the programming to get the computer to do what I need to do. Where did I learn this? I mean, first of all, let me be honest. I'm an old girl, right? So for all my young listeners, welcome. I appreciate you. But this is for those folks that I'm in a generation that was the only generation and will be the only generation that transitioned from an analog type of lifestyle into a digital lifestyle. And so back in the day when computers first came out, you had to program it to tell it what you wanted to do. And if you did the wrong program or code, it did not deliver what you needed. So y'all have seen it in museums or whatever, the little floppy disk, the soft ones and the hard ones and whatever. All that is considered programming and coding. It's just not called that. We didn't call it that back then. That was working. So throughout the years since I built those computers and I learned the language, throughout the years when I get to more modern day programming that have the UI and UX designs and they look really pretty or whatever, not the green screens that we was used to working with or black and green screens, I still understood how to go back into the coding side and alter and change what I needed that system to do. However, on my resume, did you see anything about any coding or programming? No. Because I looked at it as I was never paid to do that. So that's not really a skill that I want somebody to know. It wasn't until my platform gave me the opportunity to really showcase my well-roundedness in technology outside of the service industry and the operations and the finance and all the industries that I've been in, there was an opportunity for me to now highlight and spotlight the technology that I do every single day. That's my real world story to let you know that the exercises or any exercise that I give to you guys is not because it's just busy work. It's because it works. It really does. It works. This second tool, the dependency ratio, my husband and I had to recognize what our dependency ratio was. And it was a painful revolution. Painful. And so we then had to start going back to the two people that met a couple of decades ago that were dreamers. We didn't have the amount of kids that we had. We didn't have the amount of bills that we had. And back then, we understood our value. And so even in today's time, we had to go back into those people and build our charts on the skills that we offer to our companies, the jobs and the businesses that we run. And how can we capitalize on that so that we don't have 100% bucket over here that is easily taken away? Does that make sense? Okay. Tool number three, skills leveraging map. Okay. So I want you to create a skills leveraging map. And in this map, you're going to list your core skills, because I'm going to have my audience to not wait as long as I did to get on my own platform to understand what skills I had. We're going to start that early, okay? So what I want you to list is your core skills. What do you consider as your core skills? Don't Google it. Like, really dig deep into yourself. In all of our personalities and all of our work and all of even our migration towards the jobs that we lean towards or the industries that we lean in, it stems from the core of who we are. So what is that core skill? Are you a great communicator? Are you an amazing teacher? Do you understand systems? Do you see operations from a 360 view where some people don't? What are those core skills that you have? Once you list those core skills, then I want you to create a list of your underused skills. Remember what I was talking about, that coding, that programming? That for me, I just thought, I mean, because I use it for myself and my clients and the people connected to me, but I never looked at it as a revenue generating thing, because I thought what I did, everyone could do. I want you to remember that. Are there skills that you do? I think in the last episode, I talked about being the best baker in the community. That's a skill. But because we do things daily or frequently or easily, you know, mechanics who work on their cars and find the problems or whatever, they don't translate the fact that they're able to cipher out what that noise is or what that problem is into a deeper and a more precision understanding of finding the root of problems, because this is just what they do. So I want you to really build your underused skills. What does that look like? What do you do that you've just kind of passed off as, well, everyone should be able to do this? Write them down. And then here's where your research can come into. Then we're going to create a list of skills trending upwards in demand. Google Trends has a great program where you can just kind of see what people are researching and what's happening or whatever. But find your own research. If you're using AI programs or AI generative programs like ChatGPT or I think it's called Gemini, whatever the programs out there, ask it to list out at least 25 skills that are upwards in demand. Once you do this, this is going to give you a better map of what you have, what you forgot about, and where you need to go. According to LinkedIn's workforce reports, digital and analytical skills continue to rise in demand across the industries. So my youngest son, who was born into technology, is like amazing on computers. I mean, by the time he was 9 or 10, funny story, because again, coming from an old school mom, I walked in from work and my oven was on, and I'm looking around at the boys and I'm like, why is this oven on? And I pulled the door down, and inside was one of my aluminum baking trays and the inside of a cell phone with some aluminum foil on it. And I did a mother reaction. What I said was, whoever put these parts in my oven better not blow up my oven. Literally, that's what I'm saying. That's what I said. Okay. So don't judge me. But anyway, what I learned, because the youngest, the little 8-year-old, came down the steps and pulled it out the oven and tested it. And I was like, what are you doing? And he said, well, Dad wanted me to get a new phone because my phone wasn't working properly, but I like my phone. So what I did was, I didn't have a soldering iron, so I soldered the wires together that were broken so that the phone would work. And when I tell you, he let it sit there, came back downstairs, popped this motherboard or whatever back into the cell phone, and lo and behold, the cell phone worked. This is the kid. He didn't have a fear. He didn't do this because he was trained to do this. He just understood the dynamics of what was broken and how to fix it. And so you'll be surprised at how much you can learn. I mean, YouTube, online, from your kids, from your neighbors or whatever, these skills that align with this digital and analytical uprising and need for what's happening out there at the industry. So my youngest is an adult now, but he's in high demand because of the fact that, one, he never developed a fear for learning about technology. He understands it. He knows how to build it. He knows how to work it, which makes him valuable in the workforce. So I say that again, because what we're learning to do is stack your skills, because stacking your skills increases your optionality, okay? Optionality helps to reduce those stress hormones and the fear. Back again, tool number 3 is your skills leveraging map. You're going to list your core skills, the ones that you maybe use at work every day, the ones that you feel are industry recognized. That's one list. But the second list that you're going to do is really, really key. And that's your underused skills. Those are those things that maybe you don't use at work, but this is what people come to you for. This is what you use in the community. This is what you've taught your children. This is what you've taught your partner, your spouse, your friends. Your friends call you for this information. So what are your underused skills? And then the third list is the research that you're going to do, which are the skills that are trending. And you're going to take these 3 lists and you're going to observe how much you have already in your belt, in your arsenal of earning potential. And learn how to layer those. How do you take these underused skills and apply it to the skills that you're using and expand your opportunities? How do you look at the trends that's happening out there and review the current skills and the underused skills, and going back to your top list of any skills development, what are small little additives that you can add in to get into today's trend? The on-demand trends that's happening now. Better yet, How do you take and layer these skills and get ahead of the current trend? Figure out where we're going. Don't just navigate and operate in the current. Figure out where we're headed and build some skills and some, or build upon your skills so that you can grow with the trends. In the news, we're currently seeing increased layoffs, and especially in the tech cycles, growth in contract and freelance roles, and then rapid AI integration across white-collar work. This is not a symbol of a collapse. This is what restructuring looks like. This is what economic growth and expansion looks like. I talked to you about my generation being the only and will be the only generation to actively transition from no technology or limited technology into the technology space that we're in. And let me just make a point there for my more seasoned listeners out here. The story I told you about my 8-year-old, this is a skill I want you to start to work on. Let's not look at AI and any of the things that are out there now as bad or wrong or invasive. Let's figure out how to use them, how to learn them, and how to apply them to make the life that we currently have easier. Let's not run from it. Let's not condemn it. Let's embrace it. Whether you feel like it's going to be around or everybody has this fear of AI taking their jobs, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I just want you to think in the reality of this. Even with the AI models that we use, the chats, the all these integrations that we have, someone has to build them. They don't build themselves. So people will always have a need. People will always have a purpose. But how we learn how to utilize the skills, because not so long ago, having a phone was considered a trend. When cell phones first came out, oh my God, the news of your cell phone, don't hold it close to your head because it's going to give you cancer. It. I'm sorry, I wasn't laughing. I am. The point I'm trying to make is in every evolution that has happened over centuries, that new unknown space that gets introduced into our already regimented world becomes the evil space. So AI isn't the first innovation that has come out that people have labeled as it's going to replace everyone. Back when Henry Ford created the assembly line process, it was projected to all, especially the workers, the skilled workers that worked in the plants, that they all was going to be replaced by machinery. Is AI going to help improve systems and processes? Absolutely. Can AI completely render us unemployable? Absolutely not. We want to look at restructuring as a reward for adaptability. The question is not, is this fair? Your question should be, how do I position myself within it? Ask yourself, am I waiting for permission to grow and to move? Or am I quietly building leverage while I wait? Ownership thinking is not loud, it's prepared, okay? So you don't have to advertise to your job or friends and family that I'm doing this class, I'm over here learning this. You can if you want to, but that's about more about ego and acceptance. If you want to change your environment, if you want to change your earning, if you want to own that space, you don't always have to market it. Person that you have responsibility to is yourself. And that is even as a wife, as a husband, as a partner, as a parent. If you aren't the best version of yourself, then the people that rely on you will even get less. Okay? So it's not a selfish way of thinking. It's not a scarcity way of thinking. It is about improving not only yourself, but the legacy of you. What does that look like? What do I need to do to be a better person for me? So that I can move better, I can feel better, I can produce better, I have a better capacity. And that will be shared with everyone else around me. So earning is not just about what happens to you. It's about how you prepare in response. Scarcity reacts. Ownership strategizes. Before we close today's conversation, I want you to remember something important. Economic systems will always evolve. Markets will shift. Industries will restructure. Those realities are larger than any one of us. But the way we interpret those shifts, the way we prepare ourselves within them, is where our real power exists. Scarcity thinking tells us to hold on tightly and hope things don't change. Ownership thinking encourages us to stay informed, stay flexible, and quietly build leverage while the world continues to move. And that shift in thinking is not just motivational language. It is economic strategy. As we close today's conversation, remember this. Earning is not just about money. It's about access. It's about ownership. It's about the ability to make informed choices in a world that is constantly shifting. You don't have to panic. You don't have to react emotionally, but you do have to stay aware. A better way of earning exists so that we can think clearly, move strategically, and build systems that protect our futures, not just for ourselves, but for the generations watching how we respond to change. If today's conversation challenged you, sit with it. If it stretched you, research it. If it empowered you, apply it. Because earning differently is not about rebellion, it's evolution. Until next time, stay informed, stay prepared, and most importantly, stay in ownership of your choice. ¶¶